Warden's Watch podcast is now on Patreon, combining the Thin Green Line podcast and the Warden's Watch podcast on Patreon to bring member-exclusive extra content, both video, audio, and with product deals as well. Become a member to support our podcast and get something extra. Search Warden's Watch podcast on Patreon. Boy, you guys are in for a treat on this Thin Green Line. We are talking to Dr. Jamie McCollin, Force for Nature app, which is a dynamic conversation, and it's on a global effort, what we try to do here in the United States and Canada. And certainly Warden's Watch wants to be on that global, and the Thin Green Line want to be on that global platform. And Jamie just brings up so much connection. And it was a dynamic conversation that you guys are really going to enjoy and connect. And you're going to connect by downloading this app, Force for Nature, the Ranger app, become a citizen ranger, as we discussed. And there's going to be some new apps coming out that, Dr. Jamie McCollin actually talks about on this podcast. It's pretty exciting stuff, John. It was very engaging, and we have a thank you to do, and John's going to do that. So yeah, very engaging podcast. John, I was excited.
Yeah, I love this one, man. And talking to Jamie and also Alicia, one of his developers for this new app, Force of Nature, it's a game changer for bringing rangers and Thin Green Line citizens worldwide together into one app, communicating stories no matter where they're at in the world. And what we're going to be doing with this, guys, after you hear this great conversation with Jamie, what we're going to be doing is pulling in guests from worldwide contacts through this app, sharing Thin Green Line stories, and really bringing a citizenry into it. Citizen Rangers, as we said during the podcast.
I love that term.
Kind of the Thin Green Line of all our supporters that aren't necessarily on the law enforcement front, but they're all part of the Thin Green Line solution and the human solution to resource protection worldwide. So this is a really fun one. I also want to give a big shout out to Dr. Tina Jekyll, who's an EAP critical incident and critical incident prevention counselor out of Florida. She was gracious enough to join our live Q&A, Wayne, the other night.
Awesome having her on.
We had Paula, another great counselor, and we got input from them both on the follow-up on our live Q&A for Patreon from your officer-involved shooting four-part series. And Dr. Tina, after that, was gracious enough to become a significant sponsor of the podcast. She really likes what we're doing with the message. So we're going to give her shout outs. And she works in Florida and also on the national scale with federal agencies as well. If any of you listeners out there that are in our line of work need some support, Dr. Tina can help you out down there in the Southeast, and certainly on the federal side too.
Yeah. And that's a great way to support us too, John, is joining Patreon. Certainly we have our bills too, and by Dr. Tina certainly helped us out, but anybody can join Patreon and they get extra stuff. They get video, they get extra audio, they get extra pictures. So, and it's just some way to support us doing what we're doing through the podcast, and it's so important. So I would encourage everybody to join the Patreon platform to support this podcast if you enjoy listening to it.
Yeah, for sure, Wayne. And I mean, you start at $5 a month, and there's a lot of content you're going to get that general listeners won't get. Everything from personal videos we're putting out there for training and development that are about to drop, in addition
books,
to getting
book signings coming up.
Yeah, we got a virtual book signing.
We're
going to
do a virtual
here,
book signing December 2nd. So that's pretty exciting stuff right there. So make plans on the Patreon site. We're going to do a virtual book signing. We're going to do a Cowboy in the Woods and John's book, The Hidden War. I'm wicked excited about that. So again, wicked being good, being New England.
Yeah, it'll be fun, guys. And certainly if you can tell some friends and bring another listener into our fold for Warden's Watch and Thin Green Line and do that 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, it helps. We are continuing to grow. We're continuing to get reach, and it's all because of you guys.
Absolutely.
And we're grateful, and we want to just help, continue to send the message. And you guys are the conduit for the Thin Green Line Warden's Watch success and that message worldwide. So we thank you, and please help support us and spread the word.
Right. Thin Green Line, Jamie McCollin, Force for Nature. On this episode of the Thin Green Line, we are honored and privileged to have Jamie McCollin, PhD, who is the founder and director, right, Jamie, of the Force for Nature app?
That's right, Wayne. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
He brings a unique set of experience to the enormous challenges of environmental protection. Combining his doctorate of biological science and a decade in conservation with his early career high-end corporate sponsorship, Jamie founded the Force for Nature. Backed by leading conservation groups, global media partners, and the world's biggest brands, Jamie focused on a human-based solution to many of the world's environmental problems, wildlife rangers, supporting and guiding them to be more effective and ensure that the resources upon which we all depend on can theoretically last forever. Back in 2008, in a bid to pursue his lifelong passion for environmental protection, Jamie left a thriving career in sports sponsorship to study for his PhD in biological sciences. His research within the U.S. National Park Service and the U.S.-Mexican border used cutting-edge technology to help improve management of protected areas. He then set up and ran the technology program at the Zoological Society of London, including the management of a citizen science app and the development of software and hardware for field staff. These projects were facilitated through the partners with Google, Idiom, and Microsoft Research. Since 2015, he has been the UK ED Director for Peace Parks Foundation, the PPF. As well as fundraising and partnership management, Jamie operates closely with field teams on resource protection, community development, and managing training tools. He also works with the South African Wildlife College, which trains hundreds of conservation staff each year, and he advises the International Union for Conservation of Nature on protection of areas and areas' effectiveness. So thank you so much, Jamie, for joining us on the Thin Green Line podcast. Looking for this dynamic interaction because we are all on the same page for sure, just at different tiers. And I think as we combined our efforts, boy, we make a force for nature, for sure. and I love that you say that it's, you know, it's a human solution, because that's one of the first times I've heard that. And one of the things, I worked with a big African group. I actually did some training, and some of their complaints was dealing with NGOs, non-government agencies, and that they were just throwing money at everything they could, and a lot of money, and it wasn't filtering down. And I don't think they saw that as a people solution. They saw it as, you throw money at something and it fixes something. And I think we all know that doesn't work. And when you say it's a human solution, that gets down to the bare basics, because it's a human problem too. So I think, boy, I love that it's a human solution. That caught my attention right off. And John and I both agree it's a human solution along with you.
Yeah. Thanks, Wayne. Thanks for the kind introduction, and thanks for having me on the podcast. I mean, I think this human solution piece is central because a lot of nearly 100 countries around the world have said that they are committed to setting aside 30% of the planet, oceans and terrestrial and land, by 2030. And that's a really noble aim. It's a really good idea. It'll help us to mitigate the effects of climate change and biodiversity loss, of course. But that's no good in drawing a line on a map unless you've got the people on the ground to manage those sites. That means to do law enforcement. It means to engage with communities. It means to manage the biodiversity and the landscape and the infrastructure and all those other critical roles that rangers or frontline conservation staff or wardens do. And the indications are at the moment that there aren't enough protected area staff in not in every country in the world, but in many countries of the world, there are not enough protected area staff. And many of them are not properly equipped or trained to do their jobs either safely or effectively. And so there's a real challenge here. It's, we need rangers and frontline conservation staff to be doing a great job, but also we need to be looking after them better because they can't do a good job. But also, just from a basic rights point of view, you can't have people, and you guys know, better than me, you can't have people going about their business if they're not properly supported, especially such an important job as this.
Yeah. Jamie, you hit it on the head there, because we're here in the U.S. and we're here state by state with, fairly structured conservation agencies that we work with under the government umbrella. So training, logistics, equipment, law enforcement training, biology training, field study training. It's really structured, and it's really, as you know, having got a good start, and we'll talk about that in a minute down here in the Southwest and doing some stuff over in the US. We're very well supported in most cases. And I've done work in South Africa with the Rangers there and worked and spoke to groups all over the world. And it's humbling and it's distressing as game wardens from California, resource conservation officers, to find out how little support most groups have in other parts of the world. And yet how dedicated those rangers and those conservation groups are. And it's really heartbreaking to see what they're up against. And not only from the challenges of the lack of support to effectively protect our wildlife resources worldwide, but also the dangers they face and the ill-equippedness, if you will, to deal with those threats. So when we got wind of you and what you're doing, it's really inspiring to see. We're grateful for it. I wish this was on our radar sooner, because just getting to know you and bring you onto the podcast brought us into the awareness of the app and the structure. And take us back a little bit and tell us how you were inspired to go this direction, and kudos for doing so. But you had a good sports career, it sounds like, or something similar. You did some work here in the US, and then something lit that spark in you. Mm. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, I mean, I can probably go back a bit further. I mean, I grew up in the countryside beside a farm, or as part of a farm. I grew up, spent a lot of my early childhood sort of with horses, both working and training horses. And I think it grew in me a love of the natural world. And I continue to work with horses in Australia, and indeed in Argentina late teens, early 20s. So this kind of built this kind of, embedded in me this really deep natural love. And then I fell, I guess you could say, into the sports marketing business. And I worked in motor racing, which is the completely other end of the scale.
Right.
But it was a job. And I learned very early about this thing called sponsorship. And it seemed to me that people who were passionate about motor racing were using this thing called sponsorship to fund their hobby, and not just fund it, but like make really, really big funds.
Yeah.
And I started thinking really quite early on, if I could learn how to do this sponsorship thing, I wonder if I could apply it to my passion, which is not motorsport, but it's, wildlife protection and the natural world, because that is really starved of high grade funding. So that was the early kind of seed was laid very early on. But it took me a handful of years to try and achieve that level of competence in the sponsorship world that I required. So 6 or 8 years later, and I worked for an American company called International Management Group, IMG, who manage a lot of the big sports stars and big sports events. And that was that was the sharp end of the sports marketing industry. And then I thought, okay, when after a period of time, I thought I was ready to move on and try and bring this dream to reality. But I didn't really have any high quality or credible biological knowledge. So I went and did my PhD. I went back to university and did this PhD. And I was based in Arizona. And I was looking predominantly at the movement of wildlife across the US-Mexico border, in both directions, and indeed the effect of the barrier between the two countries through the Sonoran region. And I used small hidden cameras to detect the movement of wildlife.
Nice.
Across that border. And we had 40 odd hidden cameras in four different protected areas, so including Organ Pipe and Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge and others. And we put these cameras in places where there was a barrier and also places where there was no barrier to see if there was a comparison in the movement of wildlife. So we found some really interesting things. So mountain lion, for example, were much more prevalent where there was no barrier. Mm-hmm. Some species like coyote and bobcat were not affected at all. They're sort of generalists, so they can sort of adapt to the barrier. They kind of can work it out. But these species who need really big home ranges, for them it affected them. So it was an amazing time to spend so much of my so many of my days in the in this beautiful mountainous dry landscape and quiet landscape, but obviously there's a lot else going on there as well. And so I was, you know, the migration and the smuggling of illegal substances was also, you know, we came across that a lot, and I know you guys have a lot of experience with in that domain too. Sure. So it was a real eye opener in lots of other ways as well.
Mm. Awesome. Awesome. And that, what happened next when, after you did that study, and how did it lead to this organization now? Cause it, it's very developed and the goal is very wide reaching, and we'll talk about it in a minute, but what were the next steps that got you there?
Well, I think one of the things was that I, even in these protected areas in North America, I was looked after brilliantly by all the National Park Service staff, and the rangers used to take me out on patrol and they used to look after me because it was a pretty dangerous environment. And I made good friends with a lot of these guys. And a lot of them said, hey, you know, I didn't really start off, you know, moving into the law enforcement piece here. I started off, you know, because I loved this environment. So it was my first sort of really strong engagement with rangers or protected area staff. And then when I finished my PhD, I went to work for the Zoological Society of London, which is a UK based, but global operations conservation group. And I set up a technology department for them. And we built some, again, micro cameras, which were triggered by movement. And they had some AI in them. And they were also connected to satellite. So you could send, these remote cameras would send automatic photographs back to the park headquarters to help rangers against poaching in particular. That's what we designed them for predominantly. And we deployed these in Kenya, and we also deployed them in Nepal. And again, in both those two other continents, I worked with rangers firsthand, helping them to deploy and manage this equipment. And again, I had great experiences with all the individuals, but in many cases I found that perhaps they didn't always have the most, they might have had this quite cool, sophisticated kit that we were providing.
Right.
In many cases, they're missing a lot of other much more basic and much more useful day-to-day stuff.
Sure.
That's not to say the stuff we provided wasn't useful, but you know, it was a kind of, it was a real eye-opener.
Yeah.
So you combine these three experiences with rangers in North America and in Kenya and Nepal, and it started to create another seed, which was, okay, you know, I was thinking about how we could get sponsorship into conservation. Now I'm thinking about how we could deploy that funding if we could have it. And then that's when I started coming up with this idea that the solution is human. And finally, if I can, we've got a bit of time, so I'm not, but move me on if you need to. Finally, I started working much more of a focus in Southern Africa rather than East Africa. And I worked with groups like the Southern African Wildlife College, who are, you know, a leading ranger trainer in that part of the world. They're a fantastic organization. And again, I started to see how they were addressing the challenges which I'd seen in other parts of the world through providing these sort of really high quality accredited training programs. And so, you know, all of these things kind of fed into this piece where I could see funding potential on one side and I could see the value of you know, developing human capacity on the other hand. And that's kind of where we got to. So a couple of years ago, we were sort of, I felt ready to go with this mission.
Mm. And this is, go ahead, Wayne.
And this is probably a good time, Jamie, to talk about the North American model compared to worldwide, because rangers versus game wardens, and very, very similar, if not the exact same thing on an international basis. But I think we start drawing the line, and it's probably due to our English roots when we crossed the pond there. You know, warden came into effect, game warden, and so many people across North America gravitate to that name. Pennsylvania actually did a study. They just renamed their law enforcement division Game Wardens because they actually went out and took focus groups, whether young kids, women, older people, and they ran through a bunch of names like conservation officer, park ranger, and game warden. And game warden was what everybody knew and what they gravitated to conservation law enforcement. So they rebranded themselves as game wardens in Pennsylvania. The Maine Warden Service, they've had that name since their beginning, the Maine Warden Service, mm-hmm. which it brings back to that roots. But I just want to make sure that everybody that listens to us, which there are a lot of game wardens, conservation officers, environmental police, we have a lot of different names, but I think we all gravitate to that name game warden just because it's part of our roots. So, but to talk about a ranger and a game warden, internationally, it's the same thing. We're doing conservation law enforcement, wildlife law enforcement, yeah. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are dozens of names, even, you know, outside of US. I mean, everything from, you know, we have indigenous groups who have their own, you know, indigenous guides or protectors or guardians. And local community rangers and community conservation staff. So our interpretation is, you know, the broadest. So it includes everybody in that domain.
Good point.
So far beyond even just law enforcement. So, you know, we see law enforcement of one of, you know, six or seven key functions of the group that we're talking about.
Right.
So for the purposes of the rest of the conversation, to keep everybody, to keep your audience clear, you know, I'm happy to use the word warden, but yeah, I mean, we
no, please use the word ranger. We want to get used to that, don't we, John? I mean,
well, you know, and to Wayne's point, Jamie, that he makes a really good point from the standpoint of when I was over in South Africa on a few trips and in Kruger and working with those game rangers, it is the same job. And in so many cases, we talked about resources and how structured and supported we are in the U.S. and how dangerous their job is over there, protecting especially the big commercial black market species, rhino, elephant, the ivory trade stuff. And, you know, and they're basically fighting to the death daily without over exaggerating that situation with some of the poaching issues they're dealing with. Yet they don't have the dedicated tactical teams and they don't have the infrastructure and the support and, you know, the air assets and just the people and the weaponry and the communication capabilities. And it's really interesting to see how much resources they still need. And coming from the ground, and as an example, in California, we found, you know, the threat of a much more dangerous wildlife stealer and wildlife destroyer, the drug cartels out of Mexico, starting in about 04 and 05. And some of my background on that I'm sure you're a little familiar with, goes into completely reforming and readdressing how we were going to attack that particular poacher and come home alive. And when I think about the overseas threats to so many endangered and threatened species, Africa is an example, those rangers had to kind of adapt to what we were dealing with and form up a special operations unit dedicated to just doing that, advanced canine apprehension teams, the whole nine yards. Because now we're kind of hunting a really, really more aggressive poacher that is here for different reasons besides just making money for the village, making money on the black market to sustain their life. We're talking about global criminal networks. And your organization now, when we're looking at the worldwide wildlife trafficking trade, presents a lot more challenges, but a lot more needs and requirements for the agents on the ground working it. So my hat's off to all the rangers worldwide that are doing it with a smidgen of resources. And their story isn't necessarily getting told nation by nation by nation. On a global scale, like we are trying to do here in the U.S. So what you guys are bringing with Force for Nature seems to really, one, educate a lot of us worldwide, but also identify those hot button areas where more resources and or training and or support is necessary. Correct me if I'm wrong on that and where you guys are going with that.
Yeah, absolutely, John. I mean, I think one of the key things is, you know, we've got to know that, you know, in 2019, the International Ranger Federation, you know, they have a roll of honor every year, which they put out. You know, in 2019, 162 rangers died in the line of duty. Approximately half of those were homicides. But, you know, they just, again, as you guys know, there's the rangers, even if they're not engaged in law enforcement activity, it's a dangerous job. You're working in remote places and often alone, or at least in small groups. The year before that, it was 148 people, frontline conservation staff died. So, and the numbers are going up every year. You know, since 2015, it's just been a steady climb. So that's the one side. So these you know, the really unsung heroes. And you talked about the stories and I think this is a really key bit, the other side of the human piece that we touched on at the beginning of the podcast. This idea that humans can tell stories about places and wildlife and nature in their own language and from their own locale. Mm. And historically, the media we've been exposed to around nature is we tell stories through the eyes of animals or through the eyes of, you know, super famous TV presenters.
Right.
And I think in some ways there's this really interesting idea that if we can use the voices of rangers, you know, like you guys, you know, you've already started doing this in your own part of the world. But we think that if you can have a Kenyan ranger speaking in Swahili about the challenges they face and the opportunities and the beauty of the natural world around them, and we can have a Brazilian ranger speaking in Portuguese about that domain, then we're onto something really interesting, because we really personalize these stories and we really bring this strong human connection. And that's where we think not only do ranger stories deserve to reach a wider audience, but we also think that they're much more powerful when they come directly from a ranger who spends all day, every day doing this stuff.
Yeah, that's 100%. And it's really compelling to the rest of the world. And something we do on the Thin Green Line Warden's Watch podcast is we say, look, there's a law enforcement element that's out there on quote unquote the front lines doing the risks to protect what wildlife species we have left on, you know, on this planet. But at the same time, it's awareness, it's empathy, it's funding support from our public worldwide. And in that, Jamie, you just hit it on the head. We say that everybody's part of the Thin Green Line. We all have a little bit of a green in us, because regardless of political affiliation, regardless of frame of reference, we all like our environment. We all like our purity of water. We don't want to see species eliminated where our children and grandchildren and the next generation can't say, you know, savor the beauty of nature and just what wildlife presents, whether we're conservationists or preservationists. And we don't see enough stories, like you just said, from the eyes and the mouth of a South African ranger, somebody up in Mozambique, somebody, you know, over in Europe facing a particular situation.
Yeah.
And we need to see more of it for sure.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more, John. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think, is that a good opportunity for me to sort of introduce what Force for Nature is and what
Absolutely.
Our focus is? So,
perfect.
So with all of that kind of personal background, but also all the some of the sort of conceptual stuff and the philosophical stuff that we've just been talking about, I'm trying to slam the two worlds that I've spent, you know, conservation and communications together. And you know, we felt that one of the best ways to do that is to try initially to try and unify the hundreds, if not millions, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of rangers in that broad definition from around the world. Because at the very least, if these characters are not connected with each other, you know, it can be a very lonely, isolating job. So the first thing to do is to connect these brilliant people, and so we created the Ranger app, and on the Ranger app it's a free to download for anybody who works in this field, and the app itself contains a number of kind of key offerings. One of them is new general conservation news, which is provided by general conservation bodies. But the second one is kind of an interesting one. It's a sort of user-generated piece. And so rangers from around the world can upload a photograph, a couple of lines, to talk about what they're doing today, or to share some best practice or some knowledge or some insights. And we're getting these from all over the world. And there's some fantastic little stories. So, I don't know, rangers from Australia sharing, you know, fire management strategies with rangers in California, or Indian rangers sharing migration stories with Pakistani rangers just over the border about migratory bird species and when they're arriving and when they're leaving. So we got these fantastic sort of connections that are happening on that platform. And that spawned another whole range of different fora. So we have, you know, a forum for female rangers to share their best, their interests, and for indigenous rangers to share their interests from around the world. So it spawned this whole sort of mini community under the wider umbrella. So that's really thrilling for us. We also have an education and training platform. So this is an area where, you know, we're putting best in class e-learning tools and making them accessible to rangers from around the world. And I keep saying around the world, but actually we've got rangers from over 90 countries. I think it's close to 95. I think it's 95 now. Rangers from 95 countries using that.
Nice. So
the international network is, you know, really massive. And we think that we understand that you can't, you know, if you're in the field, you need to be trained in the field. I mean, to get the to reach the level of performance that's required. But what we think is that through digital means, we can at least provide a kind of broad baseline of from which field training can grow. And that sort of foundational training is really what we're aiming for. And to make it broad, because we talked earlier on about the 7 or 8 different areas in which rangers need to be experts, you know, from, you know, education to community outreach to infrastructure management, all of those other things. And so we think that it's important for all rangers to be aware of all of those things, even if their role draws them off into a particular area. So they might specialize in one of those domains, but ultimately it's important that everyone has they have the wider reach. So we think we can deliver that through digital means. So that's our, you know, one really key focus. And the other really big thing we're trying to do is actually, we also want to sort of sift through all of the digital tools that are available. So there are lots of sort of management tools and tools for tracking performance and also for isolating incidents. There are obviously some really great platforms out there which enable rangers to collect data which can be used by a centralized ops room or management center. And not all of them are great for rangers necessarily. Some of them are so cool, but they're super complicated and they're not really fit for purpose. So we're trying to assist them. We're selecting the best ones, and we're putting them on this platform as well. So ultimately, it's about connecting rangers to give them a sort of sense of belonging and esprit de corps, or, you know, camaraderie, whatever you want to call it.
Cohorts.
But also delivering the tools and services that can enable them to do their job, you know, safely and more effectively. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, it's an awesome platform as we're starting to see it and starting to learn more about it. And I think it's a motivating platform as well, Jamie, especially if Wayne and I are sitting here on both parts of the U.S. as an example, and I'm out checking trail cameras here in Montana when I'm getting ready to go into our hunting seasons, or I'm working with my local young game wardens that are here in Libby, Montana, of all places, and riding with them. And all of a sudden I pull up a Kenyan ranger and we're comparing notes, and I'm showing a young Montana warden that story. That's just motivating. I think it's also a recruitment tool, certainly to see how other countries are doing it and get motivated interest in the conservation officer career. Because something we've seen in the U.S., especially with pay disparity with other law enforcement agencies, mainline law enforcement agencies, let's say police, sheriffs, federal agents, and depending on the size of the state and lack of resources, we've lost a lot of good candidates to going somewhere else. Because they don't have a comparison, you know, they don't have that frame of reference of what's going on in other parts of the country or the world. So it's just a great tool to a force multiplier of all things. And when you mentioned the technology, you mentioned really highly technologically advanced camera systems you were working on down on the border that were satellite linked to migrations and movement. And you were intercepting, you know, not only wildlife trends with predators, but you were seeing like the smuggling routes. The trail camera technology and into cellular systems and into satellite systems for one ranger in a remote area to have that technology that your group is helping with. And I know some other NGO groups I've worked with are trying to support worldwide to give these guys a lot more eyes and ears out there and not have to tackle an area patrol wise, let's say, with absolutely minimal people, if not resources, whether it be vehicles, air support, whatever the case may be. So there's a two-pronged effect going on here that can really unify the Thin Green Line message of conservation worldwide. And we certainly want to promote that.
Yeah. John, no, I agree that technology is a fantastic force multiplier. And we need to multiply the force because research tells us time and time again, we don't have enough, there are not enough boots on the ground. And so technology is a great way, and not only do we not have enough boots in the ground, but the spaces we're talking about are often huge.
Right.
So you've got to put the right amount of resources in the right place at the right time. And again, you know this better than me, but so technology it can help us to achieve that. Yes, in terms of field deployments and management. Yes, in terms of the connection bit that we've just talked about. But I think there's a third area as well. And I think that's the bit that helps us to tell the story of rangers or wardens to the rest of the world. And I think that, so we're building another app platform, which is all about that. It's about trying to tell the story of Rangers, not just inside the group, and so they can share best practice, which is what our Ranger app does. But we're also trying, we're in the, just finishing it up now, which is another platform which tells those stories, takes the best of those stories and the most valuable Ranger activities and needs, and takes them to a much wider audience. Because I think we need public recognition and public support and government support. And, you know, you touched on the fact there that wildlife rangers are rarely paid as much as their you know, similar levels in other law enforcement agencies. And that's a common global phenomenon. And so a part of it's about status and recognition.
Right.
So we think that technology needs to help us to reach the people who hold those other, you know, those other purse strings and who are able to recognize the value of the work that you all do.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think, and I look at this from the standpoint of a training and education opportunity for the more developed agencies, like we've got out here, and especially what we developed in California on the special operations front to deal with a cartel wildlife criminal that, for example, the Kruger Rangers are dealing with in South Africa, maybe not with the resources they have, or other parts of the globe, and share information, not only help train and learn from our mistakes and pass on, you know, to these other officers of the dangers and the tactics and the unique challenges they're going to have to not only stop that problem, but to do so safely. And just by sharing on apps back and forth internationally, we can share initial stories that could be a one-on-one training lesson of, hey, this didn't work so well for us, and we're doing the same type of small unit tactics that you guys are doing to try to combat these ivory trade poachers that, you know, want to gun you down. It's that lucrative for them, and it's that dangerous. That's an extreme situation, but I'm taking that from experience, Jamie, just saying, hey, there's other parts of the world fighting a very vicious fight, and they're being compensated very little, and they're doing it strictly with motivation, heart, and passion. And, you know, my hat is off to them, but anything we can do to help with what we've learned over here, we're more than willing to share. And that's a more direct way than having to, it's not every day we can go over to South Africa, let's say, as an example, and integrate and share our training lessons with Rangers, which we've done, but it's very few and far between. We're in a global pandemic. Travel has shut so much down. So a lot of those operations I'm part of, with other groups, they've come to a screeching halt. It doesn't mean the problem's gone away. In fact, as you know, it's escalated through the pandemic because poachers are thriving on the chaos, and they're being very successful because there's even less pressure out there because of these restrictions. So by communicating on this app worldwide, we can almost have like a one-on-one shared experience session, it seems like, and develop that relationship, develop that friendship, that thin green line bond that Wayne and I have with wardens all over the nation and now internationally. It's just super cool. And it's that technological tool to advance our capabilities, especially when we're limited to be face-to-face, and at least until we can get face-to-face, hopefully.
Yeah, I think it's a really great point. And you've got these sort of competing effects at the moment. I mean, one is on the anti-poaching front, you've got competing effects because in certain parts of the world, obviously, global transport is down. So the countries of origin, getting smuggling routes are becoming more difficult because there are less flights and less ships.
Yeah,
but you're right. But then there's less enforcement on the ground for all the reasons you just mentioned. So there's a kind of conflicting thing there. But I strongly agree that during, not just during a pandemic, but also more broadly, there is huge value in sharing knowledge in all kinds of ways. So it could be an aid memoir provided by you, for example, for people in other parts of the world. But we're just in the process of developing a sort of an online video chat forum, which is like super low bandwidth, which enables rangers to really connect no matter how well their good their connectivity is. And that would be the sort of platform where it would enable you to deliver really focused and specialized talks to rangers from any of those 90 countries. You know, we just advertise it on the app and we say, you know, John is going to talk about, you know, specialist law enforcement tactics with particular challenges inside protected areas from his experience. And there'll be, you know, there's three sessions, and you know, we advertise that the platform and the video platform is built into the app, so it's semi-secure, or 90% secure, so you can then deliver. I mean, obviously, you probably wouldn't want to deliver every last detail,
right?
But ultimately, you're able to then deliver that lecture, and it could be picked up by any of our rangers around the world, which is a fantastically useful. So not only is it useful because we're restricted at the moment, but also I think it's just cheap. We can reach more people faster. And so, because obviously there's only one of you, or maybe there's a doppelganger somewhere we can send out
right.
to share some of your knowledge.
We all have
but
one.
Generally, there's only one. Yeah, exactly. We could clone you, and then send thousands of Johns around the world to different national parks. But no, but yeah, so we don't need to do that. We can do it through these other platforms. But you're right, and I think it prepares people. So when you or someone like you arrives on site, the basics are already in place. And so then they can really, don't have to spend a week getting up to speed, And I think that's where there's real value.
Right? Yeah. When you do have the face-to-face time, you jump a limited budget, a limited travel schedule, whatever the case may be, you jump into real tactics because you already know these folks. The lecture portion is over, the PowerPoint presentation with the images and the videos. And, I think I speak for Wayne and I both, anything we can do to expand protecting our wildlife resources with whatever knowledge we've gained in our careers over here on the US side, we love to share. And we've always said, when we develop these podcast platforms, we're not US based, we're not Europe based, we're worldwide based, right? The thin green line is a worldwide issue. And like you said best, Jamie, it's the human factor that counts, and it's a global unification, and we need to look at it that way. And that's how we view it. So we embrace that. We're willing to jump in and help. That goes beyond, what we can do together after this discussion on this podcast episode. But it's exciting, and we'd love to help out. And I know I would very much personally.
Fantastic. Well, that would be great. And I think, everything you're talking about there does align with the views of the International Ranger Federation. They're trying to create this global connection, and we support them, they support us. And I think that sort of philosophy is hugely powerful. In fact, I went to the Ranger Federation Congress in Nepal in November, nearly 2 years ago. And I think there were rangers from 70 different countries at that event. Mm. And it was just fantastic. I mean, the camaraderie there was beyond remarkable. And it really gave us that sense that, wow, if we could recreate that to some extent, we wouldn't, but not perfect, but if we can recreate that to some extent digitally, then that would be that there's a, because there really is a community here, and it's a self-supporting community. We just need to provide the tools to enable these remarkable people from around the world to connect and share and support each other. That's our mission at Force for Nature, really, more than anything else, because it's to facilitate guys like you two, so that you can support others, and vice versa. There are plenty of things we can learn from an indigenous ranger in Nepal, and there are plenty of things we can learn from and not every lesson is relevant to everybody, of course, but there's still, and I think that's what we're trying to do, is to help people, connect people in the right way to meet their own needs.
Right. Yeah. But you're taking that next step, Jamie, which I'm so happy that you're thinking that you just didn't develop this and stop. You're thinking of involving the everyday person, just like our podcast, anybody listens to it. So, because game wardens, rangers, I think, are very poor at telling their stories, that we should have been telling these things a long time ago. And that is so prevalent by seeing the popularity of all these game warden shows across the U.S. And the one thing that we see a lot is these people want to help. They want to help. And I think that next app that you're developing for the general public, was my understanding, is going to be so engaging that it's going to grow. I mean, I forget the numbers for Northwoods Law, but it's astronomical how many millions of people watch Northwoods Law. Astronomical. Now, you put those people on an app and start engaging them in how they can help and how can they can support, and you have a force, all right.
Yeah. I mean, and we're calling them citizen rangers.
Mm.
We could call them.
And I love that. Give them a title, because they are, because we can't do our jobs without them.
Yep.
Absolutely. It's amazing how, just the research that I've seen from 20 countries around the world says 80% of rangers say they can't do their jobs without the support of the community around
Absolutely.
Them. And I think it's just such a critical piece that sometimes we miss, but I think increasingly everybody gets it. But I think this idea of citizen rangers, because we're all vested in this, not just full-time wardens and rangers and protected area staff. You know, we're all vested in the outcomes here. And so getting this sort of global movement of people who sort of follow behind and can support the professionals, that makes that's another game changer, because it can deliver this, you know, amazing platform to lift the profile, the resources, and the general support for rangers. And I think, you know, we can all do our bit in that. And again, we want to facilitate that. You know, we don't think we can, you know, be the superheroes who change it all ourselves. You know, we just want to, you know, we want to be just provide the platform.
You're the catalyst.
Enable these things to happen. Exactly.
Yeah, you're the catalyst. Exactly. Right. And what that's going to do is, you know, I feel like politicians are losing touch with the outdoors, losing touch with nature, because they're so much wrapped up in everything. But when you put a force of people behind something like that, you know, because New Hampshire, we're down 4 people, just the unfunded positions. That to me, it's tragic. Mm. Those positions should be funded. I think nationwide that you see it, well, it ebbs and it ties depending where you are. And I'm sure worldwide it does the same type of thing. But that needs to be a priority in a politician's, you know, their forum, their talking points. I think we have to protect, as local politicians, as national politicians, as worldwide politicians, our natural resources. And the first step is the people is the solution. It's a human solution. And to not have that supported, you're not supporting wildlife conservation, because you can have management, you can set up by all this lines, but if you don't have the people on the ground to educate and enforce those laws and manage those laws, that you have a disconnect. And that's the kind of communication that, you know, they need to know, and it needs to be on their platforms, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that sort of advocacy, you know, piece, whatever you want to say, towards government is really critical. But I think there's another critical one as well, which is towards business. You know, I think that, you know, the on the global protected area, you know, I think I've read somewhere that they need $750 billion a year to manage the global protected area network.
Wow.
And we're only raising about 100 billion of that. So we're $650 billion a year short. I mean, this is global. Mm-hmm. And most of the money that is being raised, the vast majority, 80%, I think, comes from government, and 20% comes from tourism and, you know, philanthropy. But it's just not filling the gap. So we have to engage the private sector as well. And I'm because of my background in business before, I am a strong believer in business as a power for good. And I think that businesses can get stuff done fast. I'm working really hard with our team here to see how we can align business interests with the interests of conservation and nature protection. And I think that can help us to deliver value to business, but it can also help us to raise, you know, capital and goods and services, again, that can support rangers. And you know, you alluded to that, to these unpaid positions. Well, you didn't allude to it. You said, you know, Wayne, about these unpaid positions. And my view is that, you know, that if we can align these without, you know, stripping away the magical wonder of nature. I mean, I'm not talking about sticking, you know, giant logos all over every animal. I mean, clearly not. It's more sensitive than that. But, although, actually,
the Google point, Rhino.
Exactly. But I think there's value. I think there's value in nature for businesses, because increasingly the stakeholders, you know, employees and shareholders and customers of businesses, they want their businesses to be responsible in one way or another. And I think alignment with nature and the emotional connections that we all feel is a key part of that. We talked about it earlier. You know, we all feel we're all a little bit green, whoever we are, whatever political persuasion we have, we're all a little bit green. And so, you know, there's a way to tap into those customers and consumers and staff and through a clever alignment. So that's something else that's really, you know, we've set ourselves some big tasks here, but we're making progress. And I think the time is over for, you know, small cottage industry responses. You know, we've got to shoot for massive, massive, you know, ambition, because it's the only way we're going to save and protect and enhance all the things that we care about and we need to live.
Yeah, that's perfectly stated. And the one thing we talk about with the app, and Wayne, you just hit this on the head, you know, we talk about the ground roots, the citizenry, the citizen ranger force, if you will, the more they're aware, the more the pressure and the interest with our political legislative groups to fund ranger positions, to fund study positions, whatever the case may be, and be in that business for good model, Jamie, that you're talking about, and have private sector support for this as passionate as the government agencies, because ultimately, and you said it, things get done quickly when a business is committed. It's a very efficient, very quick process versus the red tape of government funding through political legislation and everything else. So in Wayne's case, in the small state of New Hampshire that has less than 100 wardens, Wayne, if I'm correct, significantly less than 100.
38 field guys, and I think we're at 44 total.
Yeah, and you lose four positions.
That's huge.
In an already small force, man, that's anorexic, paper-thin, thin green line activity right there. I mean, in California, we're at 500 plus. We lose, you know, 15, 20 to develop another team. It's a hit. Don't get me wrong. We could have 1,000 in that crazy state. But those things are the things that this app I see with enough pressure of people understanding what's going on from other parts of the country. Hey, New Hampshire needs some help. Kenya needs some help. You know, Rhodesia needs, wherever the forces need to be there, the louder the voice is, the more we're going to get that. And Jamie, I'm going to look at the mission statement that really caught me on the website, and it blew me away because it was super ambitious and inspiring. And it says, our aim by 2030, we want to see at least 1 million professional wildlife rangers on the ground, and we have a plan. That's a dream force, man. A million strong. That's the best wildlife protection army we could have. Right. How is that coming together? How do you see that goal being accomplished? It's a little bit of a rhetorical question, but maybe spell it out a little bit for us if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure thing. I mean, I think that the numbers we're talking about are rooted in the expected area. So I said earlier on that nearly 100 countries have signed up to an agreement to try and protect 30% of the planet. Now, you know, if you want to protect 30% of the planet, I think the moment we have 50 million square kilometers of the planet protected, and that's about, on average, I think it's oceans and land, it's about sort of 14%, about to say 15%. So you've got to double that. So we're looking for 100 million square kilometers of land and sea protected. And it's feasible. You know, every environment's different, but it's feasible for an individual ranger. You guys can contest this if you wish. To manage maybe 7 kilometers by provided for, well trained, well equipped, 7 kilometers by 7 kilometers, and of course there's shifts and stuff, so you've got to so over time we are thinking that at the very least you need that you need a million, but you may need more, probably need closer to 2 million as well, but the problem at the moment is we don't even know how many rangers, wardens, indigenous guardians that are, and that's a major challenge. And it's a big challenge to try and identify how many there are in every country in the world. So there's a sort of we hope that by 2030 we will be able to count that number, but we think that so our focus is not so much on the hiring bit, it's more on the training bit.
Yeah.
And to answer your question about how we deliver it. So we think that how on earth can you reach a million people? Okay, well, a large number of them will be trained because they will have been to some of the brilliant academies in the US or in South Africa or other places. But for those who fall between the net or haven't been trained, 30% of rangers on this survey that we're aware of, said they hadn't received any first aid training in the last year, for example. But we think that using digital means, we can reach maybe not a million, but we can reach 100,000 by 2030. Mm-hmm. And 100,000 rangers who are in touch with 10 other rangers each, that's mm-hmm. your million. So we're trying to find these sort of ranger leaders in numerous places around the globe. That's why we're really excited about the 90 country thing, because it means that at the very least, we've already got 90 individuals. I mean, we got a lot more than that, but at the very least, we've got 90 potential leaders around the world. And then each of them can spawn 10 or 20 or 100 other people who have some of that basic, well-prepared knowledge that we're talking about. Nice. So that's how we think we can reach the numbers. And then it means that when other training opportunities come in, you guys arrive or one of the other NGOs we've been talking about, that all of this, they can build upon this basis that we've already constructed. And we you know, the second bit is how we really scale it up, how we ramp this thing up. And that comes back to that funding piece. You know, we think we can make, if we can deliver on this corporate partnership arrangement, we can scale up the quality of the technology, the quality of the e-learning, the levels of engagement, and all those other things, which can then really make this the Ranger platform a fantastically useful tool that all Rangers really almost can't do without. You know, it's just too useful to do without it. And I think that's, you know, that's, I don't think that's an unrealistic aim. And I think that's how we reach the majority of people. And we'll never reach everybody, of course, but we think that 1 million is the bare minimum by 2030, because without that, you know, we're just going to have, it's like having a farm without a farmer. I mean, what happens?
Right. Yeah.
You haven't got the people to manage, or a car without a driver. I don't know what the best analogy is. But anyway.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some of the challenges you've faced already with this Ranger app, Jamie? Because I see some connectivity for one, you know, cell phone service. It's an app. Smartphones availability worldwide, is that pretty common? I'm thinking like Nepal and those areas that you've already mentioned, Africa, and then I think you have alluded to having no service and low band in order to reach more. I'm assuming that's been a challenge, and if there's been other challenges with development of this and things you've overcome and things you still face.
Yeah, it's a really good question, Wayne. Actually, we're always really conscious of these things. Certainly, in certain parts of the world, people are not using the latest smartphones, and they might be using a 10-year-old smartphone, and so we have to make sure that always that the app that we have can run on any phone. And actually, so that's why we built a web app, which enables people, even if their phone cannot handle the complexity of the individual app, they can go onto the web and they can get access to it as, you know, like a website. Mm-hmm. So that's one sort of solution. I mean, you know, the bigger issue is connectivity. You're right. But we see that only moving in one direction. I mean, it's almost inconceivable that there'll be less connectivity in 5 years or 10 years than there is today. You know, we're only moving in one direction, and you look at the sort of map, you know, and it's almost like one of those things and just sort of the veins keep spreading around the world for connectivity. So that's going to increase, and the speed and cost and all those other things are going to come down. So we think that's going to improve a lot. I think there's a sort of cost issue as well, though, which is, you know, do you want Rangers who are on, you know, $100 a month or $200 a month having to spend, you know, their data on the app? So that's something we also think about a lot. So we, as I said, we try and make the bandwidth really narrow. And we also have a lot of quite funky things so that, you know, once you downloaded something once, it stays on the you don't have to refresh every time, you know, you come in and out of an area of connectivity. So you're not constantly re-downloading the same stuff again and again. But it is a challenge, and we always think about it. We do not want people to be having to make the choice between learning something or connecting and, you know, but it's going to cost me $2. You know, I don't really want to do that. So we're thinking hard about how to achieve that. And we're looking at corporate partnerships, for example, as one means of doing that. And they have there's a quite interesting notion of, you know, I don't know if you guys had reverse charge calls where, you know, your phone... When I was a sort of teenager and I was late out at night and we didn't have mobile phones.
Collect calls.
I didn't have any. Yeah, collect calls. Yes, collect calls. I collect calls to be picked up by a family member. Oh, can you? And so, but you can almost do the same thing with that. So that the data accumulates and it's pinged to an individual phone, but all of the charges come back to the telecom company, and then the telecom company charge us. So there's ways of doing those kinds of things.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only other sort of challenges, I mean, I went into too Good much idea. Detail perhaps on the comms piece. But, you know, I think the other one is it's always about breaking people's perception. And, you know, people are very comfortable in the way they've always done things. And whether that's a corporate or a conservation NGO or anything else. So it's always this sort of sense of, wow, this is new. How, you know, and takes a lot of effort to do things in a different way. And so most people, no matter how well intentioned they are, want to continue doing things as they've kind of always done them. So the sales job is a massive one, and you know, it's that's a real challenge, I think, at all levels, really, is to try and get people to adopt these ideas. But I think the pressures are so great from the other side. You know, environmental degradation is obviously so apparent that you know, people want to try new stuff. So I think that's in our favor, but I'd rather that wasn't the stick that was behind, the stimulus.
Yeah.
But it is. So we've got to make the most of that.
Could you share a story with us, that's on the app that people can reach out about, a ranger or something? And I know our listeners just love to hear those. That's for sure. That's why I think this next Citizen Ranger thing is going to be tremendous, because they love engaging, they love listening, they love watching, whether it's Northwoods Law, Wild Justice, Louisiana Law, Lone Star Law. It just that they want to engage. I just think that's going to be great. And part of that is telling our stories, and that's what we do here on, you know, the Thin Green Line and Warden's Watch, and share. And I'm hoping you can share a pretty cool story.
Yeah, I mean, there's one of the most memorable ones for me, at least, was one of our advisors. In fact, is a Maasai, indigenous Maasai ranger in Kenya, and he's the team leader. He's a highly experienced ranger, and he combines some of the kind of modern techniques with many of the, you know, ancient ones and traditional ones from his society. And they protect this, you know, community landscape. And anyway, one of the stories that he shared with us on the app was that there was a lady who was out collecting firewood in one of the more remote areas of this landscape. And she was pregnant. And she was surprised by an elephant, or she surprised an elephant, which took a charge at her and knocked her down, and, you know, tossed her in the air and knocked her down. She was injured, broke her leg, I think. And but anyway, so she was in deep trouble. Anyway, the rangers heard about this. They managed to use their sort of non-lethal skills and techniques to get the elephant and the other group of elephants that it was with, and in fact it was with a young elephant, to move them away, and then the rangers who were on patrol nearby, they made a sort of makeshift stretcher, and they carried her sort of 20 kilometers out. And
wow.
Steering heat to the nearest, you know, town where, you know, she was recovered, and she gave birth to the baby, which is uninjured and unhurt, and there was all sort of fine. So it was this really strong kind of community, constructive community piece, but it was a sort of pretty heroic act, because, you know, running with a stretcher 20 kilometers, that's not easy across rough ground. Carrying a human.
Yeah, that's a hard run.
A hard run.
And it's inspiring. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, I was with rangers in just down the road from there. Actually, was, you know, well, just down the road. It was probably 100 kilometers down the road. And we were training with rangers on various anti-poaching and some of the technology that I was talking about earlier on. And we were sitting around the table one night, and the first couple of days they've been a bit reluctant to engage with us. It's been a bit sort of, the conversation been a bit sort of slow. And one night we were sort of sitting around the campfire, and someone just sort of said, "Oh, you know, you're English, I am." And what do you think about, what do you think about the soccer or football, as it was then? And suddenly it triggered this conversation about, you know, Manchester United or Arsenal or one of these British soccer teams. And suddenly all these guys sort of came completely alive, and the whole thing sort of lit up.
Nice.
And then I sort of said to them, "Oh, do any of you guys play sport?" And one of them said, "Oh yeah, I came third in the Nairobi Marathon, you know, 3 years ago." I was like, "Wow, that's unbelievably impressive."
Wow.
Fantastic. I said, and another guy said, "Oh yeah, well, I was in the, Commonwealth Games for 400 meters. I was like, "My God, there are only eight of you around the table. You're all like elite athletes. How come you guys did this?" And they said, how can this be?" And they said, "Oh, well, when they do the ranger selection for this area, we all do the basic, you know, academic tests and personality tests. And, you know, however many people are still left, they just say, well, going to run around that mountain, and the first 50 you're back, you're in." So, of course, what happens is
you get all these ad hoc tests,
supreme athletes, all in this little small area. But it was really interesting. But I think it's also an indication of how tough, you know, that there is this really strong employment imperative here. You know, these are people who live and have always worked in these types of areas, but But the idea of the protection is takes time to get to really embed themselves with. But the first motivator is to get a job and to have a revenue to support a family. And that was the other thing that came across in these conversations with these guys. You know, it was really strong. So I think there's a couple of little things and a couple of little anecdotes.
Those are great. Thanks for sharing those. Outstanding.
Yeah. Where is your app being used the most, do you think, internationally?
So good question, Wayne. Again, we have probably sort of 7 or 8 countries where it's most widely used. We've got sort of some quite big sort of spikes in the US and in Argentina and in Kenya and in South Africa and in India and Australia. So there's sort of, and the UK, of course, that's where we're based. So yeah, there's sort of, it's quite a global spread, but nice. But there's obviously a heavy leaning towards English language there, but we've just brought out a Spanish language version of the app as well. So it's now like a fully integrated Spanish version.
Awesome.
Which is fantastic. And we've got some great support in Central and South America and those guys are sort of pushing it hard. So we're really excited about that because there seems to be a huge degree of sort of, we find that when the Latin American users are on the app, they are big contributors and they're very passionate about and very open, I should say, more than anything else about what, you know, what they share and their activity. So they're really a major part of the future, we hope. And we hope to bring up more languages too. So it's there's lots more potential.
Right. Have you seen like increases, like you mentioned Argentina, and every time I think Argentina, I think waterfowl hunting and engagement there. Yeah. And you had some kind of connection to Argentina with horses. So is that a target area that you targeted because of their wildlife, because of their, so that's one place that's, you know, I'd love to go visit because I've seen it looks beautiful. And and when I think South America, you know, wildlife, I think, man, they're teeming with it.
Yeah, I mean, weirdly, we didn't sort of target it. It just just popped up for whatever reason. although Alicia, my colleague, she's half Argentine, so maybe she's weaving little Argentine sort of.
Alicia is weaving some webs in the home. Yeah,
exactly.
To good effect. To very good effect. Yeah.
But Wayne, I'd love to go down there again too. It'd be great. And obviously, you know, there's the further south you go, the wilder and more magnificent it becomes. It'd be very good. So, you know, we welcome all countries from South America, but Argentina we has a special place in our heart.
Nice.
No doubt. I John, anything else you can think of? I'd like to go another 30 minutes, to be honest with you, so we can do this a two-part one, Jamie.
Yeah. Because
it's very engaging, and I've enjoyed it a lot. I've got a lot of notes here, you know, just looking at the app, I really appreciate like the Roll of Honor. That to me and John, we do a special tribute in May to our fallen officers. And whenever I see somebody else doing a tribute to our fallen officers worldwide, it threw a passion out to me right away that, you know, you guys appreciate it that much that's there. So for me, that hit a home run, and I found that this morning when I was going through stuff, and that hit a home run with me, and I started going through all the different, in the line of duty deaths and the reasons for them, the U.S., Africa, all over the world, homicides, killed by a tiger struck me, because we don't see that a whole lot here, but those are the types of things, and I think it's reflective of the people that are using the app when you talk about the indigenous, I can't even say that word half the time, but people that are protecting their communities on that level, everything, and I think, boy, it streams through this podcast, it streams through everything. Wildlife protectors, it's not about the money. It's about the passion. I think each one of us starts with a passion. John talks about that spark that sparked in you. It starts with a passion, and it really doesn't matter the course you take, but it's always there, and it's always passionate. And I just started teaching college for the conservation law program here in the northern part of New Hampshire, and I try to tell the educators it's passion these kids have, and we need to keep that going, that passion, because that's why they're here. They're passionate. It doesn't matter how much money they make or what the risks are. It matters that they're going to make a difference in some small way for, you know, our future, for the wildlife, something we have passion about. Boy, that's, and that just steams through you. It steams through this, this whole forces for nature. It's, you know, we're the forces for nature. Be a force for nature. Citizen Rangers, forces for nature. I love it. And, yeah, I'm going to be singing your praises. I'm sorry. Oh, I shouldn't be sorry.
Likewise. I'll be singing yours too. Yeah, I've already had a few friends who've asked me, you know, how they can listen to the to your podcast. So I'll be doing likewise. But you know, you're right, and I think there's this connection and this sort of seed of passion is at the heart of it all. Because you know, after all, we are that comes from, because we're all part of nature, and I you know, strongly believe that that's where it all comes from. And 10,000 years ago, and you know, and before, you know, we were embedded in nature. So that's much more than we are today. So yeah, it's important for our survival, but it's also, I think it's important for our mental and emotional health as well to be engaged in these things.
Absolutely. And Jamie, thanks again. We are definitely going to do everything we can to promote and spread the role of the app.
Great, thank you.
And be part of it, man. It's been awesome to have you on the show. We look forward to working with you on any other level we can. This is definitely a force multiplier, and kudos to what you're doing. But before we go, is there anything you'd like to leave our listeners and viewers with that we haven't covered? Anything in a bullet point that
how to download, how to join, all of that.
Where to reach the bona fides of how to get to the app and whatnot.
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, I'd like to just say, you know, thanks for all their service to all of your listeners. We are passionate about nature, but we're also passionate about supporting the people who do this work, and that is all your listeners. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the app itself, we welcome everybody to it. It's at, can be found, it's called the Ranger app. And it can be found on either the Apple Store or Google Play Store. So it works for Android or Apple devices. And it's just the Ranger app by Force for Nature. So, you know, look those things up, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, and excellent. I certainly want to see a spike in downloads for that app after this podcast. I think that game wardens that listen to it will be very engaged. And, you know, the problems I have, Jamie, and I'll say this, is there's so many apps out there. So I've started grouping my apps. And, you know, John and I are on so much social media that, you know, we both have said enough's enough.
Yeah.
And it's hard to start engaging in another. But I'm definitely going to start engaging with this app and put it in a priority spot for me. But I think, you know, we as wildlife protectors, we should be doing that. We should be telling their stories. We certainly do it on this podcast. It's so awesome to make that connection worldwide. And just for us, it's fascinating, I think, because like John said in the beginning of the podcast, we are so structured in the U.S. We have structure. We have government. And some of these, you know, non-government agencies that, you know, support specific species, you know, when we say, hey, you should be, you know, helping out law enforcement, they're saying, oh, the government does that. Well, the government isn't doing as much as it did anymore, and we're starting to slip. So, A, throw your support in there so we come back up to where we should be, or a lot of them, and the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, for one, you know, supports International Wildlife Crime Stoppers. It's one of the first ones. The National Wild Turkey Federation just came on board in supporting International Wildlife Crime Stoppers because they see it. It's not about buying all this property and management. There's a whole puzzle piece that they're missing. It's the conservation law enforcement. It's the human factor. You've come up with some really good points. You're very thoughtful in what you're doing, and it's really to the point. It really, really is. So I'm going to encourage everybody I know to download the app and start engaging with our brothers and sisters from across the world. It's very special, and I appreciate your time. Alicia, thank you. She's been in the background. No one knows she's there, but she certainly started this, and we started this a few months ago, engaging each other, and I really appreciate you coming on.
Great. And we look forward to working with you more. We'd love to have you guys on the app. We'd love to have you sharing your knowledge. We'd love to have you sharing, you know, sharing news of the podcast as well, because, you know, our users will be interested in what you're doing as well.
Well, we're going to make that happen, Jamie. And thank you so much. And Alicia as well for being on today. This has been amazing. And we'll do some follow-up after we get off the recording and get you some stuff sent back and forth via email. And really look forward to working with you guys. This is going to be fun.
Perfect.
Cool.
Thank you.